Carlos Sainz has been yapping yet again. This time to his countryman, Fernando Alonso. And now I'm yapping too. And this could turn out to be one of the most important conversations that Carlos has had regarding his Williams future. It's quite clear that the shakedown and Bahraini testing made something very clear. Spain is really emotionally invested on this season of F1. Not only because it's hosting two Grand Prix this year, the new one being Madrid, of course, I'll be going to that, so you can expect some content from that event, but because it's two headline acts, Sainz and Alonso, are both entering the next era of the sport with question marks over them. I gotta tell you, Spain really does manufacture two things at world-class level, F1 drivers and F1 drivers that can talk their engineers into retirement. So, naturally, they got talking, apparently, for 20 minutes, this coming from Carlos Sainz himself. Which is interesting because Bahrain didn't only show us where things might go for 2026 in terms of the pecking order, but it also showed us two teams with plenty of homework, the kind they've been promising that they'd already done. The contents of the conversation that Sainz and Alonso had, I will share with you for your consideration. Ahem. I ran into Fernando one day in the paddock and we talked for a good 20 minutes, catching up a bit. And well, he's in a situation a bit similar to mine, which is not ideal, complicated, but he's also eager to see what the team is capable of bringing and to see his team's ability to react. In the end, we both depend on nothing more and nothing less than seeing how our teams react to the complicated situation we each find ourselves in. But I also wish him all the best and hope that Aston Martin and Honda improve on what they showed in Bahrain. And it wouldn't surprise me if Fernando also did a cheeky pitch as to say, hey, come and join Aston Martin, succeed me, or be my teammate. That's a little bit of a span of stuff, so we'll save that for later. Because we're here for the actual conversation quote, and Sainz is doing quite a lot of things with that particular tidbit. Firstly, he's publicly agreeing with Alonso's diagnosis, that both of them are stuck in projects that started the new era of Formula One on the back foot, after everyone thinking that they wouldn't. Saying something is not ideal or complicated, that's polite driver speak for we're losing time, data and confidence. It's also a little bit of British code I will share with you. Saying something is not ideal is saying, I really, really hate this, but I'm too polite to say anything negative about it, so instead I'll just smile through the pain. And in Aston Martin's case, Bahrain was very not ideal. And the drivers haven't hidden their grievances either. Fernando has been really honest about the situation, whereas Lance, well, even though he's saying the sky isn't falling, he's not really been offering a proper solution instead of just saying, Dad, get Honda to put in more power! And when Carlos is talking about how the teams will react, that is a pretty big tell in where his mindset is right now. Because it frames the next few weeks or even the next couple of months as a bit of a test of sorts. He is testing the team. Because as of now, I'm predicting that the driver's market for this coming year, going into 2027, is actually going to be particularly sedate, considering that there are so many contracts up for renewal at the end of the year. It might be really boring at the top end, but I'll give you a little bit of a clue as to what I think now. That one of the cloudiest areas of that driver market might be around Aston Martin, and it might be around Williams. Because what Sainz has telegraphed here alongside his buddy Fernando is that they are watching their respective teams like a hawk. The cars are bad. That's understandable. It was a bit of a guessing game, these regulations. The question is, what are you going to do about it? What's the recovery plan, James? What's the recovery plan, Adrian? On the surface, for Williams, it's reducing the car's weight and then everything else might follow. And as for Aston, well, how long have you got? This to me feels like Carlos is giving an indirect warning to his team that he is understanding of the situation that the team finds itself in is that it's going through a whole heap of organizational changes, but one thing he will not tolerate in due course is operational sluggishness or aimlessness. And here's what adds a little bit of meat to this when you think about the wider context here, because I don't want to just spend the entire time talking about Carlos, because Alonso's situation is sort of in a similar bucket, which is probably why this conversation went on for that long, a third of an hour. Because Aston Martin's test was an absolute mess. It was far removed from what we thought at the shakedown. Yeah, they were late, but what they showed, pretty car. Oh, that looks developed. Oh, they're sandbagging. Well, if they are still sandbagging, the amount of sandbagging that Aston Martin have got going for them at the moment would make Toto Wolff blush. But the reality is that they were very much on the back foot. They had part shortages. Honda were having issues with the power unit, especially the battery. And that, in turn, led to the car not running at its full potential. And a Formula One car that can't run at 100% tends to seize up and not run to the best of its ability. We still don't know, and Aston still does not know exactly what they built. And with Alonso saying in a different interview that he knows and the team knows and Honda knows exactly what to fix, but it may take some time, is also similar to what Sainz was saying in trying to assess how the team is going to react to the situation, in the case of Aston, becoming a works team for the very first time. If it turns out to be something that Alonso likes, then he'll more likely stay for 2027. If it's going to become very, very clear that it's not going to happen before he turns 50 or approaches close to it, or his 500th Grand Prix, then I think he might start to consider his options, Fernando. And for Sainz to include Aston Martin and Honda in his quote, he's not being poetic or anything, he's actually referencing a specific example of public failure mode. That they couldn't run enough and are in a situation where damage limitation is the only way forward. Williams has a different kind of complicated going on right now, because they too were limited in terms of mileage, but not nearly as bad as Aston's. And you really can't blame the Spaniard for feeling frustrated at the moment, because right now what the team is offering is the complete opposite of what the expectations should be. Based on 25 and 26, it should have been the other way around. Last year was meant to be a throwaway year. James didn't really care where the team would finish as long as they made good preparation for 2026. That was what it was all about. That is until Albon got that top five in Melbourne. And then Sainz started to pick up the pace. And then got a couple of podiums. And sure enough, fans of Williams started to remember what joy felt like. That's the problem with unexpected momentum. It raises expectations accordingly. I still remember that quote from James saying that after he got a fair few good results, a P8 that would have been received with absolute jubilation in 2024, in 2025, it soon became annoying. Once they started to taste progress, patience started to become less of a virtue and more of an embuggerance. And something I must really state here is that Williams' plight is not really necessarily to do with reliability. It's down to the pipeline as well as the car, I recall Sainz saying in a Spanish interview, being a little bit on the chubby side. They did make up for lost time in Bahrain with plenty of long runs, but that being said, Sainz did admit the team was discovering limitations once they really got underway with their program around the Sakhir circuit. And the Spanish coverage? Oh, they've been really explicit about the issues, to do with the weight and also aerodynamic deficits. Plus them still learning the car after missing the shakedown. And whilst the team's done well to bounce back from missing the shakedown, Aston also helping out indirectly for them becoming the clown show of testing, it was still a suboptimal run plan. And even though the team and James were able to fall back on the virtual testing program, and from what I saw in photos and how he's explained it, it looks really impressive, it's still not quite the same for just getting out there for real. So the way you can read that conversation is that two top-level drivers were having a bit of a powwow in regards to their respective teams and realizing they don't have a stable platform underneath them, do they? They thought they did, but they actually don't. At least not right now. It's not a cause for alarm, at least not yet, but it's still something that they should be justifiably annoyed about. Because come on, for Fernando, 2026 was meant to be the year, as said by Papa Stroll when he signed on the dotted line when Sebastian Vettel retired. For Carlos, 2026 was also the year where Williams would start to make good on all of their investments, their extra capex spending, and even with Dorilton Capital, the way that James was pitching it to them for extra investment, the guy in charge of Dorilton was saying, hey, we don't care about what happens up until 2026. As long as that car is good, we're absolutely invested in this team. What happens if it's not good? I don't expect James's job to be on the line, but I can easily imagine the patience at Dorilton will start to wear that little bit thinner, unless they start to come good in 2027. And it must have been especially galling for the fact that Carlos got those podiums. Yes, he probably loved it at the time, but after that winter period, yeah, he probably would have rather not had those podiums. It would have been far less aggravating. Okay, Law, why does this really feel like a warning to you? Well, because Sainz doesn't threaten anyone directly. Instead, he's shifting responsibility. You might decide to be a bit more crass and say, oh, well, he's just passing the buck. But when you stop to think about it, he already did his part in providing more insight and intel and providing Albon a little bit more confidence and giving the team hope. Now it's up to the team to reward Sainz for moving to their team and not to somewhere else like Red Bull or Audi. There's no more, oh, we're just going to give it time nonsense or anything. He wants answers right now. He wants the team to start executing now. Because remember, he does have an option to leave the team after this season if he's not happy. And I recall James saying that, hey, if that were to happen, no hard feelings. We let you down, Carlos. What Carlos is simply asking is, what's the plan to come back from this and when we will start to see meaningful progression up the constructors' table? Because right now, I'm pegging them for either 8th or 7th at best. And by deciding to tell us all about this little conversation he had and the basic contents therein, it then therefore sets a benchmark that we fans and the press can actually use to measure both teams' progression throughout the year. You know, we're talking through upgrades, reliability fixes, simulator to reality correlation, what have you, as well as how both teams will be able to cope under stress, because there's going to be a lot of stress for both teams to endure this season. The onus is therefore on the team to make good use of the services that both Sainz and Alonso provide them, as well as maintain their faith in the project that it's not dead in the water or anything like that. For Fernando, he is still hopeful that things will come good. He's not like what he was in McLaren in 2017, where he basically thought there was no hope with McLaren and Honda. And trust me, Fernando knows all about what Honda had to go through with McLaren for those three seasons, so with Sainz deciding to poke the figurative bear that is the mention of Honda with Aston Martin, he's poking the most sensitive part of the bear, the gonads, which in this case is the readiness of the Honda power unit. Therefore, my best take on this is that Sainz is signalling for patience, but it's conditional. He's essentially told the F1 world what the internal driver metric is all about, how races are going to be assessing their respective teams. It's not about where the car is today, but it's about how fast will the team learn with these new regulations and put those learnings into effect. And at the same time, he's being very smart, politically speaking, Carlos, because he avoids burning anyone specifically outright. He is talking about this being a team situation rather than a driver situation. And he's even told the media that he's absolutely okay with these regulations and that the FIA and F1 needn't be too hasty in amending them, that it's not necessarily that complex to understand. And it is a bit of a slight dig and response towards Lewis Hamilton's understanding of the rules in that they are ridiculously complex. In fact, you could argue with what Sainz said, he's actually relishing the challenge in trying to figure out all of the new tricks and tools that drivers have at their disposal. And I think he's also covered his arse a little bit. So you can consider this situation to be a bit of a fork in the road situation regarding 2026. The left fork is a reality where Williams is able to adapt actually pretty quickly, making use of their brand new facilities and their brand new partners. Yes, they'll start off relatively poor when stacked up against last year, but the trend line will prove to be strong, pointing upward constantly by the time we get to the summer break. There will be far fewer mistakes than during the first part of 2025, because Williams does have a history of operational gaffes, as we saw especially around the Miami Grand Prix. They'll bring quick upgrades that deliver a lighter car, and thusly, chunks of lap time will drop off and they'll ascend up the order to the top of the midfield perhaps, because there's quite a big gap between the fourth and fifth fastest teams at the moment. In that world, Sainz stays without question, because a recovering team plus a central role, like Carlos has, can be more valuable than being a passenger at a bigger team, or moving to another struggling team whose power structure has a reputation for being very reluctant to criticise itself. Then, of course, as you could probably tell, the other fork, the right one, will end up being probably, ironically, the wrong one. It's a reality where Williams react slowly, that there is still some pain in them transitioning throughout breaking everything and updating all of their facilities and their resources. There would be still some work to do, which means that they may have to just grin and bear it for the majority of the year with a really big car. Yeah, having a big boxy car might be good for cooling, but if that's the only thing that car is good at, squandering potentially an advantage with the Mercedes power unit, then that won't count for Toffee if they are able to get a better car, because other teams might have been able to progress faster. Not to mention all of those organisational and operational issues that we've seen throughout the 2020s will continue to dog the team. And whilst we all appreciate James being quite candid regarding hardships and struggles, as time progresses, they'll start to count for less when it comes to goodwill and understanding. So therefore, you would consider what Sainz has said with Alonso as some sort of polite way to talk about an exit narrative. It'll become more than just a little bit of chit-chat, because top drivers can tolerate a bad starting point, but not a slow learning curve. With Fernando, everyone knows Aston Martin's Bahrain test was ugly, and he has plenty of experience with how teams operate and respond to challenges, so I doubt he'll flounce off into the sunset after just 1 year of hardship. Because you've only got to look at what happened at McLaren. He endured 4 seasons of hardship and pain, mostly with Honda, but then one with Renault, when he realised, hey, this team just does not know how to build a good car. Why am I even still here? And then let's not forget his times with Team Enstone. He left after 2006, then came back, went away again, and then came back again. He just did not know when to quit with that team. He can take a lot on his magnificent chin, Fernando, as long as he knows where the team's going and if the plan makes sense. Right now, it does, because reportedly, Honda admits that they won't have a miracle cure in time for somewhere through the season, but at least they know what to do and how they can eventually come back to somewhere which is a little bit more representative, and they'll make good use of the offerings and packages that the FIA is affording. I think it's called the ADUO, where if a struggling power unit supplier is really struggling, they can get some extra development tokens to try and make up the difference. And it helps that Fernando said there's nothing wrong with the chassis per se, that once the power unit thing is sorted, then the rest will follow. And as for Williams, James's stance towards Carlos's tenure with that team has actually been quite consistent, because he's made it very, very clear that not at one point has he been trying to oversell a magic bullet that Williams might be able to find, that it's gonna be tough. We are going to struggle a lot, but at least we'll keep you informed, and as long as you're invested in the project, we would love to have you with us to find out where we can be. And that will tend to produce, I think, a situation where if Carlos decides to call time on the situation, it wouldn't be seen as an act of betrayal. It would be just a shrugging of the shoulders, as I mentioned earlier, and they'll just have to move on with their lives. But I will make no buts about it. If they did lose Carlos at that point, it would be an existential crisis for that team. After trying for years to get somebody to buy in to the project from the top end of the driver market, to lose them after just 2 years, I don't think they'd be able to recover from it for a very long time. But then again, I don't think Carlos is the kind of man who would abandon this team at the first sign of trouble. Yes, he'd be absolutely pissed off with what's going on right now, but as long as they can find some sort of equilibrium and come back from it, then that will be fine. I think 2027 may be the moment when he decides to call time on it. This year, it would have to be really bad if he pressed the eject button. But yeah, him sharing this conversation he had with Fernando, he is very much telling the driver market that he's not necessarily trapped by Williams, that there might be some wiggle room for conversation. And he's also very much aware that the media is constantly watching him. He's often lambasted the media for interpreting things the wrong way. So with him deciding to share this conversation, he's telling the media to back off and not judge the team for where they are right now, including judging himself. Just wait a moment, guys, okay? That's what he's basically saying. That if you're gonna judge me or the team, at least wait until we've had a few races under our belts, okay? But speaking of the driver market, there is a version of this story that does kind of ride itself. Not necessarily guarantee, I will get the spanner out for this particular bit, but it's certainly something that came up in my mind. You have Alonso, freshly bruised by a Bahrain test that looked more like triage than preparation, runs into Carlos and they recognize the shape of each other's situation. Not the same technical issues, but the same emotional geometry. And their respective teams have proven to be reactive instead of proactive. Right now, the car's ultimate pace is unknown. Right now, their confidence is conditional. So it would not be out of the realms of possibility that Alonso may decide, I don't know whether or not I'm cut out to wait another year for this, after waiting for 3 years for hope, after having some taste of success in 2023 and then nothing. It's actually a little parallel to Carlos, that immediately after joining that team, he gets some podiums, but then he's facing the perspective of maybe not having any for a couple of years. And even though Alonso has very much defied the laws of aging, he is not immortal. He openly admits, and Adrian is starting to admit, that the pathway to glory might be a very long one. Whether or not he could sustain it towards a closer age of 50 or 500 races, that's a debate for another time. The runway is essentially quite long. And there's also been noise around Aston Martin's wider business situation and branding optics lately. The latest example being massive job cuts to Aston Martin Lagonda, on top of the massive debt, and the naming rights changing hands from the car company mostly to the F1 team itself. That doesn't automatically translate into doom for the F1 team, but it does add pressure to deliver a clean, competent story on track that they can use for commercial benefits. In other words, Aston need to look as stable as possible if they want to win the hearts of any other drivers out there, or indeed other investors, or indeed new owners. Perhaps part of that chat might have been a little bit of a cheeky proposition, that it doesn't have to be necessarily a direct, hey, come and join this team and work with me, either as my teammate or me with my hand on your shoulder, and together we can help rebuild this team with our collective knowledge and understanding, and make good use of your ability to really uplift teams that have been struggling. It's something I think that might have cropped up and been played around with a bit. And that potential is real, because I don't think you need me to tell you. Carlos Sainz is often seen as one of the best reference drivers on the grid. And the difference between he and Nico Hülkenberg, another really good reference driver, is that Carlos has front-runner credentials to his name, including 4 wins with the Scuderia. That carries a lot of weight. And reference drivers are often worth their weight in gold for teams that really need to find a new way of thinking. They're the kind of racer who can tell engineers what the car is doing without turning it into interpretive dance. And as we've proven on this channel, Carlos can talk engineers to the end of the world and back. At Williams, that authority is part of the pitch, a team built around him and his feedback, with Vowles selling a serious long-term plan and the sense that science is central to all of it. And when you think about it that way, the scenario of him moving over to Aston to replace or work with Fernando does start to unravel pretty quickly, because unlike Williams, Aston right now has a lot of voices by design. You see what I did there? Yeah, that brand campaign is not aging well, is it? Because you've got Newey, you've got Honda, you've got Papa Stroll, you've got Andy Cowell and Koji Watanabe. Then of course the entire kingdom of Saudi Arabia, effectively, you name it. And the team is still trying to find any sort of rhythm after that test, because really, right now, it's basically on life support. Whether or not they will make it to Australia is something that is even being tabled as a possibility. It shouldn't be a possibility. It should be a guarantee. And sure, they might, Aston, decide to hire Carlos Sainz to replace Fernando Alonso, but hiring him and actually listening to him are two very different things. And it really doesn't help that Aston Martin has a tendency to collect smart personnel as if they were trinkets. Williams, by contrast, has made it very, 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 very clear that Carlos is the center of their universe. And him working together with Albon, another apolitical driver who knows Williams like the back of his hand, those two could be mighty together. Whereas a Sainz-Alonso partnership, whilst interesting and very in-depth, is an unknown, and a Sainz-Stroll partnership, well, I really don't want to think about that. Could Carlos tolerate actually putting up with that sort of arrangement without sounding his mouth off? I don't know. So yeah, Alonso might have actually dropped some bait in front of Carlos's eyes, but would he have actually taken the bait? I don't think so. Because the safest environment for him right now is a place where he knows his words are absolute gospel. Because there are far too many voices going on at Aston Martin at the moment, I don't think Carlos would get a look in. So in the end, that conversation that Carlos and Fernando had with one another were two veteran drivers comparing damage reports. Not to panic over their situations or anything, but instead to try and calibrate. This tidbit shows that Carlos doesn't seem happy. He sounds like he's sizing the team up. And that can be more dangerous for a team than somebody who's just angry, because anger can be soothed. Sizing something up can easily become a decision in due course if not careful. Yeah, Vowles will keep contract details private. We won't get a look in regarding exit clauses or anything. That'll just be pushed to the side. But Sainz's leverage is real, folks. Because Williams fought for years to sound like a serious destination after, I think, 20 years of being in the relative wilderness, sometimes having a good driver, but more often than not having to rely on power unit supplier drivers or pay drivers. That's a thing of the past now. But if they're not careful, it could become their reality once again. It would hurt them in a way that lap time simply cannot. So maybe that conversation he had with Alonso helped him understand what exactly he's demanding from his team. He's demanding proof of what's going on. He's not asking for any more promises. He's asking for actual proof. Okay, Williams, you said that 2026 was going to be a turnaround year. Prove it! And right now, I'll prove to you why you should stick around for this video over here. I really do think you'll like where I'm going with this one. I'll see you over there.